It was less than a year after September 11th, and I was at the Chicago Tribune writing about shootings and murders. It was leaving me feeling pretty dark and depressed. I'd done some activism in college, so I decided to help a local group hang door knockers against animal testing. I thought it would be a safe way to do something positive, but of course I have the absolute worst luck ever, and we were all arrested. My charges were dismissed. But a few weeks later, two FBI agents knocked on my door, and they told me that unless I helped them by spying on protest groups, they'd put me on a domestic terrorist list. I'd love to tell you that I didn't flinch, but I was terrified. And when my fear subsided, I became obsessed with finding out how this happened, how animal rights and environmental activists, who have never injured anyone, could become the FBI's number one domestic terrorism threat. A few years later, I was invited to testify before Congress about my reporting, and I told lawmakers that while everybody is talking about going green, some people are risking their lives to defend forests and to stop oil pipelines. They're physically putting their bodies on the line between the whalers, harpoons, and the whales. These are everyday people, like the protesters in Italy who spontaneously climbed over barbed wire fences to rescue beagles from animal testing. These movements have been incredibly effective and popular. So in 1985, their opponents made up a new word, eco-terrorist, to shift how we view them. They just made it up. Now, companies like Pfizer and the Cattlemen's Beef Association, the Fur Commission, Ringling Brothers, they've all backed new laws to silence their opponents. The Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act turns activism into terrorism if it causes a loss of profits. Now, most people never even heard about this law, including members of Congress. Less than 1% were in the room when it passed the House. The rest were outside at a new memorial. They were praising Dr. King, as his style of activism was branded as terrorism if done in the name of animals or the environment. Supporters say laws like this are needed for the extremists, the vandals, the arsonists, the radicals. But right now, companies like TransCanada are briefing police about how to prosecute nonviolent protesters as terrorists. The FBI's own training documents on eco-terrorism are not about violence, they're about public relations. Today, in multiple countries, corporations are pushing new laws that make it illegal to even photograph animal cruelty on their farms. The first of these ag-gag prosecutions, as they're called, was a young woman named Amy Meyer. And Amy saw a sick cow being moved by a bulldozer outside of a slaughterhouse as she was standing on the public street. And Amy did what any of us would. She filmed it. When I found out about her story, I wrote about it. And within 24 hours, it created such an uproar that the prosecutors just dropped all of the charges. But apparently even exposing stuff like that is a threat. Through the Freedom of Information Act, I learned that the counterterrorism unit has been monitoring my articles and speeches, just like this one. The point of all of this is to make us afraid. But as a journalist, I have an unwavering faith in the power of education. Our best weapon is sunlight. Dostoevsky wrote that the whole work of man is to prove that he's a man and not a piano key. Over and over throughout history, people in power have used fear to silence the truth and to silence dissent. It's time we strike a new note. The way that we do that, the way that we fight fear and the way we move forward, isn't by placing our faith in politicians and CEOs. It's by coming together in our own communities of resistance. It's no accident that again and again and again the people on the front lines defending the earth and the animals have come from this. From punk, from hardcore, from basement shows and liner notes and records like this one, from hearing that these laws have no meaning past the setting of the sun. I know how bleak and overwhelming this all can feel. I struggle with that darkness every single day. But despite it all, I draw power from this. I draw power from seeing handfuls of people, no different than you or I, with no money and no special training, fight back so fiercely that it has rattled the most powerful industry on the planet to their core. I heard this interview with Rodney Mullen a while back. People call him the godfather of street skating. But he said the thing about the Bones Brigade in that era of skateboarding was that it was so much more than any individual. It's like a match, he said. A match only has power because of the atmosphere around it, the air that allows it to ignite and allows that flame to breathe. I'm not sure what the appropriate response is right now, the appropriate response to capitalism's relentless destruction of the natural world and the repression of those who dare to resist it. But I know that each time we choose compassion over greed, each time we turn our fear into rage, each time we refuse to live an ordinary life, that atmosphere only grows, and the brighter every new fire will burn.